Good morning. In the headlines, a U.S. Coast Guard cutter fired on and sank a derelict Japanese fishing vessel off of the coast of Alaska yesterday. The Ryun Maru was about 180 miles southwest of Sitka after floating into U.S. waters on Saturday. It had been adrift since last year's earthquake and tsunami in Japan. The Canadian Coast Guard first noticed it more than 2 weeks ago off of the coast of British Columbia. U.S. Coast Guard Chief Petty Officer Kip Wadlow says the Petersburg-based cutter Anacapa began blasting the vessel with a 25-millimeter gun and explosive shells yesterday afternoon. Wadlow says the Anacapa fired at the ghost ship for about an hour, took a two-hour break, and then started firing on it again.
When they stopped, the vessel was on fire, and it had developed a slight list to one side, indicating that it had begun to take on water.
Anacapa remained on scene until the vessel had completely sunk, and that was about 6:15 last night. About 400 rounds were fired into the vessel, and water was also hosed onto the deck to load it down. Wadlow says the Coast Guard, through the U.S. State Department, was able to contact the boat's former owners in Japan. The owners estimated there could be up to 2,100 gallons of diesel fuel still on board. Wadlow says the Coast Guard consulted with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and the National Marine Fisheries Service before deciding to sink the vessel. He says the primary concern was the risk that it posed to other boats.
This vessel doesn't have a crew, it doesn't have running lights, and it is adrift in the sea lanes, but it poses a significant threat to maritime traffic that is transiting up and down the coast through those sea lanes.
Wadlow says the Coast Guard does not believe the boat contains any radiation since it was set adrift before the leaks at the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant in Japan. A November 5th trial date scheduled for a Montana inmate accused of murdering a woman in Yakutat over 15 years ago. 50-year-old Robert Dean Kowalski is accused of causing the death of 39-year-old Sandra M. Perry at Yakutat's Glacier Bear Lodge in July of 1996. Special Prosecutor Paul Miovis expects a jury trial to last 3 weeks. He says it actually will include litigation of two homicides, including one from another jurisdiction. Public Defender Eric Hedlund has not had the opportunity to review the voluminous amounts of evidence coming in during the discovery process, and with his involvement in other high-profile or complicated cases, Hedlund says the previously set trial date of May 29th is no longer possible. Kowalski appeared in Juneau Superior Court yesterday after his extradition from Montana earlier this year. He's already serving a sentence for the death of a Montana woman in 2008. Based on Kowalski's incarceration and Hedlund's caseload, they waived the 120-day speedy trial rule. Kowalski is being charged with first- and second-degree murder in connection with the Yakutat case. Here's something that you don't see every day. A Juneau couple, described as being together for about 44 years, appeared together in Juneau Superior Court yesterday. They were sentenced for theft, not for breaking into another home or business or fudging a business's books, but for misplacing rent deposits as they worked as managers at the airport mini mall and apartments, or perhaps they were just too lenient, maybe to a fault, with their own tenants. 67-year-old Cheryl Hansen and 63-year-old Paul Hansen were sentenced to 2 years in prison, with 2 years suspended, meaning no time to serve. The sentence was part of an earlier plea agreement with prosecutors. The Hansons changed their pleas to guilty to reduce charges of second-degree felony theft in February. The couple started work as managers in 2001, and Cheryl did the bookkeeping and Paul did the maintenance in exchange for a $1,000 monthly stipend and use of a two-bedroom house with paid utilities. Prosecutors have said that the owners of the mall discovered at least $68,000 in rent deposits were missing after the Hansons left their employment in June of 2010. Assistant District Attorney Angie Kemp says it was a serious offense, but the plea and sentence agreement was specifically crafted so that the Hansons would not go to jail.
It was an elaborate scheme, as far as the state can tell, that the Hansons engaged in. And it appeared to be the result of an ongoing scheme to defraud and a scheme as it relates to the business to take monies.
That's not true, according to Grace Lee, one of the public defenders appointed to represent the couple.
I don't think that they're mastermind thieves who sat there and planned out a way to take money from AMMA for 9+ years. I don't think that's what happened. This is a situation where Mr. Hansen's failing health contributed to a deterioration of their work product. And it just happened that they happened to work with checks and cash, and he would receive it and place them in places that he wouldn't remember.
Lee says approximately $13,000 in rent checks has already been found stashed in a box of Christmas decorations placed in storage. It's unclear if any of those checks are still viable or can be deposited. Phil Isaac, son of mall co-owner Richard Isaac, read a letter on behalf of the other co-owner, Dick Winchell, which outlined years of delays for deposits and excuses.
There is no way to determine how much money they actually took over the years, but the approximate amount of $70,000 for the months of May and June probably represent only the tip of the iceberg.
The Hansons reportedly acknowledged to police officers that the deposits had not been made. They claimed they had all the funds, but a search by officers of the Hansons' belongings could not locate the money. Both Cheryl and Paul Hanson read in court separate letters of apology intended for owners of the mall. They both suggested that deteriorating mental and physical health issues led to the misplacement of all those deposits.
Sometimes I didn't remember taking the rent or to do the paperwork to show that I had taken it. But I am sure that we did not take whatever money is missing. Again, I apologize for the things that have happened and led up to this situation.
Cheryl Hansen acknowledged misplaced checks or bank bags of thousands of dollars of cash in their house. She also said she was lenient with largely low-income tenants who could not pay rent because of a hardship.
There were times when rents were held before depositing, not because we used money, but in order to allow some of our tenants to get their rents in when, for one reason or another, they had not been able to pay on time.
Superior Court Judge Luis Menendez saw it as a predicament that snowballed out of control over time. A restitution hearing is planned for July. The Hansons may be required to pay back some of the money as part of their 3-year probation, but they're currently on a fixed income. Also, something that you usually don't see in a courthouse, when Phil and Richard Isaac left yesterday, they stopped to tell each of the Hansons that they accepted their apology and forgave them. Oil prices are up this morning, with Brent crude at $123.43 a barrel and West Texas Intermediate at $103.31 a barrel. Metals markets are closed today for the Good Friday holiday. Weather forecast for the capital city calls for sunny skies for today. Some patchy fog this morning. Otherwise, it could get up to about 50 degrees. Low tonight, just under freezing with some clear skies. And it looks like it may be sunny and clear for most of this weekend with some light winds. Temperatures between 31 and 54 degrees for this weekend. Currently 27 degrees at the Juneau Airport. I'm Matt Miller, and that's a look at news and weather for this half hour. The Coast Guard says a Japanese vessel set adrift by last year's tsunami has sunk in the Gulf of Alaska, ending its long, lonely voyage across the Pacific Ocean. Chief Petty Officer Kip Wadlow in Juneau says the ship sank about 4 hours after a Coast Guard cutter, the Anna Kappa, unleashed cannon fire at the abandoned 164-foot Ryun Maru on Thursday. It burst into flames and took on water. The Japanese ship was dislodged by last year's tsunami. It was destined to be scrapped when the Japan earthquake struck. The Coast Guard decided to sink it rather than risk the chance of running aground or endangering other vessels. Chelista Corporation officials say the Native Regional Corporation will issue shareholder dividends totaling nearly $4 million this year. The dividend checks will be mailed to shareholders next week. Spokesman Tom Leonard says at $3 per share, the payout is $300 for the average shareholder with 100 shares. A port protection man charged with second-degree murder is scheduled to go on trial Monday in Craig. Ronald O'Neill is charged with beating and stomping Tracy Simpson to death August 7th. Prosecutors say the men had spent the night drinking on O'Neill's float house, which was moored in port protection. Time for the admonition. If you're serving on a jury for an assault case in Juneau Superior Court this week, then you might want to find something else to do besides listen to the radio for the next 2.5 minutes. Another witness called to testify yesterday about their opinion of the character or reputation of a Juneau man shot last December in the Valley. That was to establish the state of mind of Kenneth Nayland, who allegedly pulled the trigger, wounding John Durant. Nayland's brother-in-law, John Day, admitted that he was so drunk that he remembered little of the night of the shooting at the home on Glacierwood Drive.
Yeah, we've discussed it a couple of times, just how we feel about the whole deal, but I haven't really thought about it. I knew this day would come, and then I'd have to think about it. I've tried to piece it together, but I can't remember anything, so...
With the jury later absent from the courtroom, Day described various instances which Durant apparently boasted or told of an alleged robbery attempt, an assault, and even a supposed homicide. Repeated in front of Nayland on the night of December 20th, it could establish what Nayland may have been thinking or feeling later that night about having a much bigger and intimidating person in his bedroom. But Day, also friends with Durant, seemed to change his story later on the stand when the jury and Durant were both back in the courtroom. Shooting victim and prosecution witness John Durant also testified, detailing how they talked, drank a little beer, smoked some weed, and then went to Nayland's bedroom to listen to music and play guitar on that night. But he could not remember how he got shot or much of anything else afterward.
He said, "I'm sorry. I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry I shot you. John Day is, are they here yet?" Meaning the paramedics, I believe. But then I go out again, and... I remember waking up to somebody asking Ken Nayland something about how this happened, and he said, "I threatened him, and I called him a liar."
Durant says the bullet from the fired .357 Magnum entered beneath his left eye, went through his nose, and exited underneath his right eye. Durant says he has a metal plate essentially as an upper right cheekbone that always is uncomfortable, and he says he has little feeling on the skin there. Durant denied most of the stories repeated about him, his supposed 9 years' experience in the martial arts, and frequent slap sparring and involvement in that alleged homicide. Proceedings in Juneau Superior Court got off to a rocky start yesterday morning. One of the 14 jurors was eventually excused after writing a note to the judge. She reported that another potential juror, very early on in the jury selection process, commented that he thought Nayland was a hothead. That man was not selected for the jury, but the note-writing female juror said she remembered the offhand remark after Day's fiancée, Nadine Paratovich, testified Wednesday about Durant's character. It's unclear if anyone else in the jury pool heard that judgmental remark. After a prolonged inquiry by Nayland's attorney, including a session that was closed to the media and the public, the female juror was gone, and the jury was down to 13. Testimony is expected to continue at least through today. A National Weather Service hydrologist says Alaska's largest city should be spared major problems from the melting of near-record snowfall, but the potential for flooding continues along major state rivers. Scott Lindsay says Anchorage has seen an orderly thaw so far with warm daytime temperatures and freezing at night. He says there should not be flooding unless there's a real heat surge. He spoke yesterday in Alaska breakup forecast, which was organized by U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski. And here in the Juneau area, only 5 days of skiing left this year at Eagle Crest, including today. Special events begin with the annual sighting of the Purple Easter Bunny this Sunday and end next weekend with a big splash at the Slush Cup. As Barbara Lynn tells us, Easter at Eagle Crest is like a festival.
This year, it's going to include not only the Easter egg hunt, the bunny chase, and an all-over, all-mountain Easter egg hunt where you can win a season pass. But then we have fun events like the bonnet contest, most outrageous, most flirtatious, and most bodacious, and the neon Easter bunny costume contest. And we wind things up usually at the end of the day with a bunny toss. But don't worry, it's not the purple bunny. It'll be a plastic one.
The theme this year is Neon Easter, and Lynn says that applies to the Easter Bunny costume contest.
One other feature we're adding this year is snow painting. You can get groups together, have a mound of snow, and paint the neon Easter theme with little spray painters. There will be prizes for that, and that should decorate the whole mountain up for the rest of the season.
Check SkiJuno.com for a complete listing of all the events for Easter. And Lynn says it's also time to start thinking about the Slush Cup, which is back next weekend for the season's end. Weather forecast for the Capital City area this weekend calls for essentially clear skies, sunny for at least today and tomorrow. Maybe some clouds moving in Monday through Tuesday, with temperatures today and tomorrow and Sunday between about 31 and 51 degrees with some relatively light winds, and temperatures next week getting as high as 55 degrees. Currently at the Juneau Airport, a few clouds reported, 27 degrees, 31 degrees in Douglas, 23 degrees reported in Gustavus, and 24 degrees in Hoonah under clear skies. I'm Matt Miller, and that's a look at news and weather for this half hour. Good morning. In the headlines, a U.S. Coast Guard cutter fired on and sank a derelict Japanese fishing vessel off of the coast of Alaska yesterday. The Ryun Maru was about 180 miles southwest of Sitka after floating into U.S. waters last Saturday. It had been adrift since last year's earthquake and tsunami in Japan. The Canadian Coast Guard first noticed it more than 2 weeks ago off the coast of British Columbia. U.S. Coast Guard Chief Petty Officer Kip Wadlow says the Petersburg Pace cutter Anacapa began blasting the vessel with its 25-millimeter gun yesterday afternoon. Wadlow says the Anacapa fired at the ghost ship for about an hour, took a two-hour break before firing on it again.
When they stopped, the vessel was on fire, and it had developed a slight list to one side, indicating that it had begun to take on water.
Anacapa remained on scene until the vessel had completely sunk. That was about 6:15 last night. About 400 rounds were fired into the vessel, and water was hosed onto the deck to load down the vessel. Wadlow says the Coast Guard, through the U.S. State Department, was able to contact the boat's former owners in Japan. The owners estimated there could be up to 2,100 gallons of diesel fuel on board. Wadlow says the Coast Guard consulted with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and the National Marine Fisheries Service before deciding to sink the vessel. He says the primary concern was the risk that it posed to other boats.
This vessel doesn't have a crew, it doesn't have running lights, and it is adrift in the sea lanes, but it poses a significant threat to maritime traffic that is transiting up and down the coast through those sea lanes.
Wadlow says the Coast Guard does not believe the boat contains any radiation, since it was set adrift before the leaks at the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant in Japan. The State House yesterday agreed asbestos mining can be allowed in some parts of Alaska where it's too expensive to get replacement materials. The legislation addresses a problem for communities where asbestos occurs naturally, and its presence has stopped road construction and other public projects that need local gravel. Kotzebue Democrat Reggie Jewell sponsored the bill, which sets up a process for determining the risk posed by the asbestos and allows certain areas to use the local asbestos-laced gravel.
This creates a voluntary program that allows certain areas to use naturally occurring asbestos gravel for construction projects. It provides immunity to landowners, to people involved in the construction process, and for the state of Alaska as it relates to injuries, deaths, or sicknesses. And what this really does, at the end of the day, is give hope to some of those projects that have been waiting for almost 10 years.
Jewell says Ambler in his district has been particularly stymied by existing restrictions, but asbestos occurs in several parts of the state. The bill now goes on to the Senate. It allows a community to ask the state to declare the presence of naturally occurring asbestos. Only the State Department of Transportation can initiate the rating where there is no community that would be affected by the declaration, such as land along the Dalton Highway. The declaration would require the community to address safety and handling issues. The Senate Finance Committee has released a new version of its oil tax plan that addresses both new and incremental production. Those are areas the committee had indicated it wanted to do some more work after it released an oil tax plan earlier in the week. The overall plan represents a structural shift in Alaska's tax system. Instead of the current progressive surcharge triggered when a company's production tax hits production tax value hits $30 a barrel, the Senate proposal would have a progressive severance tax levied on gross production after royalties. Governor Sean Parnell is asking Alaska Native leaders to lobby the legislature in support of his education initiatives. At Wednesday's Native Issues Forum here in Juneau, Parnell asked for support for his merit-based performance scholarship program, which began last year. He said he's willing to include a needs-based component, but he opposes using the program for students who pass the high school equivalency exam, or GED. He said that would create a double standard.
You have one class of kids that were counting on it and were earning it, and another class of young people who don't have to go through the same rigor and yet are being given the scholarship. And that's not something I support. I think there are other ways to address that, but certainly not to incentivize getting a GED rather than getting a high school diploma.
Parnell also asked for support of his kindergarten through high school education funding plan. That would give Alaska school districts a one-time payment to help cover inflation. He criticized Senate plans for a several-year increase in the base student allocation, the per-student amount that each district receives from the state. The vice chairman of the House State Affairs Committee is holding up a resolution celebrating the Girl Scouts to investigate information, quote, floating around the internet about a connection between the group and Planned Parenthood. Representative Wes Keller asked the resolution sponsor if there was a connection. Senator Betty Davis said she was not familiar with that. Keller said he was not moving Senate Concurrent Resolution 17, in part to investigate the claims, prompting a fiery response from Davis. She said she saw no connection between what Keller was asking and the resolution, marking the 100th anniversary of the Girl Scouts and making 2012 Year of the Girl. She said she had not seen what Keller was asking about, and if it was a concern, it should have been shared earlier. Keller said this wasn't the death knell for Senate Concurrent Resolution 17. And Representative Carl Gatto has been hospitalized to receive treatment for a kidney condition. Melanie Lesh, an aide to Gatto, said the Palmer Republican was hospitalized shortly before a planned party on his behalf yesterday. Lesh says Gatto was taken to Bartlett Regional Hospital after a planned doctor's appointment and that doctors were considering a medevac to Seattle for further treatment. Gatto, who has battled prostate cancer, was away from the legislature earlier this session to receive radiation treatments. It was not immediately clear whether he will return to work before the session wraps up later on this month. Weather forecast for the Capital City calls for sunny skies for most of the day today, tomorrow, and Sunday, with temperatures between 31 and 50 degrees for the next several days, with some relatively light winds along with that sun. Possibility of some clouds next week and temperatures getting up into the mid-50s. Currently 30 degrees downtown Juneau. I'm Matt Miller, and that's a look at news and weather for this half hour.